Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are.
For
another Thursday. I'm Michael Sterling. And who are you, sir?
I can see clearly now. The rain has gone.
Really?
I feel like
the heat is gone.
I feel like it's been so long. It hasn't been so long, but we took a break.
Yes,
and
we
then
took a
I
week
feel like
break.
I feel like I'm walking in new snow.
Oh, you
that's
do?
I don't know
well,
why.
That's nice.
Feels magical, doesn't
it?
I'm all a tither.
You know what? I've never really had that pleasure. Well, I have walked in snow, but I've never seen it snow. Isn't that interesting?
You've never seen it
in
snow?
In my whole life, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really, that's kind of tragic.
A native Californian.
Wow.
Yeah. It is tragic, isn't it?
Yeah. That's really odd.
Well, enough about that. Let's say hello to the sponsors.
Let's do that.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And, Paul, we have two guests today,
Two guests.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes,
am I dating
do.
Myself?
Yes, you are.
Am I? Okay.
Right, and that's hard to do.
Yes. Well, you know, I may go blind. But continue, Michael.
Two guests today performing two classic plays from opposite spectrums of the theater. Being presented by two of the most acclaimed theater companies in Los Angeles. Joining us at the first part of the hour is joining us at the first part of the hour in a show about which the New York Times said an old-fashioned knockabout farce, and that's something to be cherished. Portraying the role of Charlotte Hay in Ken Ludwig's hilarious Moon Over Buffalo, let's say hello to Kimberly Lewis.
Kimberly!
Hello!
Welcome.
How are you?
Thank you. It's a lot of applause.
Yes. You. Well, you brought them all. I mean, as a,
I did.
And
bust them in.
Yes. And the group rep has produced over 250 productions and over 40 world premieres. They kick off their 41st season at the Lonnie Chapman Theater with one of the most influential and provocative plays of the last century, the Pulitzer Prize and Drama Desk Award winning A Streetcar Named Desire. Later in the hour, we'll talk with the gentleman portraying the iconic Stanley Kowalski in this legendary piece of American theater, but we'll welcome him right now. Daniel, is it Kamen or Kamen?
It is Kamen.
Daniel Kamen.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Hello, Thank Daniel.
Hi,
How
Michael.
Are you?
Doing great. How
Good.
Are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. We're delighted to have you both.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks
yes.
for having us.
I want to see both
Before
of
we get to our lovely guests,
yes.
Paul, how was your week?
My week was great. We went to Cirrus and I, Cirrus Miracore, my partner with our production company, Miracore Productions. You like that inventive name? I'm on the cusp of everything, Michael. Went to the Hollywood Pitch Festival. That was a very, very interesting experience. It was, and I don't want to say profitable, but lucrative for the contacts and whatnot
right.
to see what happens. But it was, you know, speed dating for pitches. You know, you sit for 5 minutes.
Pitches for scripts?
For film, yeah. for features, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you sit and you pitch for 5 minutes, and then a bell goes off, and it's like, remember on Carson when the interview was over, and it was like, move down the couch.
Right,
you
exactly.
know, that's what it was.
Exactly.
But it was fascinating, and a fascinating study in human interaction, too.
Was it at all intimidating?
You know what? It wasn't for me. I saw a lot of people who were intimidated. I wasn't so intimidated by having to talk and pitch something because, A, from doing this and having to talk for an hour mm-hmm. a week, but also from my days I used to do warm-up for the studio audiences for
Jenny Jones
yeah. show and a couple of other shows. And you just, you know, if you get the gift of gab and know about, you know, keeping energy and focus. And I could tell... You know, when people gloss over, much like you are now, I can tell. That, you know, but you know, I got to tell you, the most fascinating thing about the whole thing was the social, and it's unfortunate, and I don't know if I'm the only one who noticed it because I happen to be older, but the social ineptness of younger people. Because they're all so buried in their phones and they're buried in their iPads and that just seeing them having to... Now, granted, there are also a lot of them are writers, so there's also that solitary weirdness of the writer anyway. but it was just very unusual to watch, to see that as the people got younger, the more they seemed less skilled in just basic social interaction.
Well, of course. Wouldn't that make sense? And it's like, you know, the agents in the agencies that are young agents, not, I mean, even some celebrities, you know, shift over to an agency that they, these young ones, have no idea. And when they call in, they say, who? You want who? You want to speak with who? He's not available. You know, whatever. It's like scary.
No, it's unusual. So how was your week?
You know, it was good. It was busy. I had the pleasure of signing David Burnham yesterday and Valerie Perry, the great two of the great stars from the Broadway stage. To be headlining my...
David Burnham, that's that homely guy, right?
Real homely.
Just set up. I saw his postcard once, and he's just like, the guy looks like he's... chiseled out of marble.
Yes.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It's true. And he's as talented as he is good looking, as so as Valerie Perry.
Very much so. Yes. Yes.
They last worked together in Sunset Boulevard for Musical Theater Works.
Yes. Yes. Oh, and she is lovely. We had her on the show. She's a wonderful woman.
This is the first time that they will be singing in concert together in an intimate setting, such as Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. So it's going to be on the 21st of September.
Michael has a supper club at the Federal, it's upstairs at the Federal Restaurant right next to the El Portal in NoHo, and it's a great
happening.
Place. It's a happening.
It's a happening place. Yeah. But I want to go back to one thing you said. You said you didn't know if it was because you were older, talking about the Hollywood pitch meetings. Paul just had a significant birthday, and he had it at the most amazing place.
Oh, yes, yes.
At the beach, Manhattan Beach.
It was in Manhattan Beach, and it was called Shark's Cove.
And these people did, like, so many great things for you.
Oh, my wife set up two big surprises, and Concert Karaoke is the other company that we did. She did a karaoke thing upstairs. Karaoke is great for a party. Because if it's a party, you know everyone who's going up there. So it's always a blast. I don't care so much for karaoke.
I did hear you singing.
What? I did.
You were singing.
What? I sang, what did I do? I did the Hello from Neil Diamond.
Yes.
Because you could always just schmaltz the hell out of that. The Lion Sleeps Tonight with my mom and my sister. And Run Around Sue by Dion.
Give our guests a little taste of your mother's voice.
Oh, yeah. Charlotte sings like if Tom Waits sang, you know, In the Jungle from my... And actually, that's not true. She had the lightest... You know, she has the Brenda Vaccaro speaking voice.
Yes.
But when she sang, it was just like this light, little, lilting, beautiful thing. And everyone was just like, that's your mother? It's like, you know... But no, she does have... She came in all the way from Connecticut. You know, for this.
Well, I was very impressed, really, by the number of good singers. You know, I mean, Paul's very theatrical, so we both are. We hang out.
Theatrical is what you say for mediocre singer. A lot of them were great singers. Paul's very theatrical. Look at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, kidding. But as it was, Shark's Cove, excellent place. If you're looking to have a private event, they have this beautiful upstairs area right above the restaurant. The people there were great.
And you're also right on the ocean.
Right
almost,
on the water,
half a block away.
And Concert Karaoke, and it's Concert with a K, I believe. Look them up on Facebook, but both of them, wonderful, wonderful vendors. Thank you for bringing it up, Michael.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
So shall we
Let's do it. Our first guest's local credits include the original autobiographical comedy My Awkward Years, the rock musical The Possession of Mrs. Jones, which received 3 Ovation nominations, Falsettos, the LA Weekly Musical of the Year nomination, and the cult hit Chico's Angels, with my friend Oscar, who is in that. Yes, he's hysterical.
Oh, he's my buddy. Yes, he is.
She's been performing, teaching, and directing improv and sketch comedy for many years and currently performs in the improvised medieval musical Camelot, which I think is truly one of the great titles of the ages.
It's not Camelot, you guys.
Yes.
We wanted to make that very clear in the title.
It's Camelot.
Camelot.
next up for her, Sketchy Queens 3D.
Starring Oscar Quintero.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And Danny Casillas, also from Chico's Angels.
3D at Cavern Club in October. Right now, we're talking about Moon Over Buffalo, directed by a great friend of State of the Arts, Kiff Scholl, who I happen to go to college with.
And, of course, the show that I think you're talking about, too, over at the Casita de Campo, wasn't that the one that our State of the Arts friend Kevin Farrell was?
Kevin Farrell, yes. Well, Kevin, there's a whole history with Kevin and Oscar, too, but we'll talk about that when we get to it. Let me finish introducing her. Please welcome Kimberly Lewis. Hello.
All right, guys, keep it down, keep it down.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I know Kevin Farrell also.
Yes.
I directed him and Oscar in a holiday variety show called Feliz Navi Divas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was before Kevin moved back to Cleveland.
Kevin, nice. I helped Kevin come up with the name and the original concept for DWI.
DWI. Oh, brilliant.
I helped him write the piece for the equity. It's not Equity Fights AIDS, but it was the best in show drag show that they used to do.
Yeah, yeah. They and still it, do it, I
and it raises money for some AIDS agencies
organizations.
Mm-hmm. And my wife and I actually helped him with some of the writing and creating some of the stuff for that. And then he just approached the Tupperware world, which Oscar had already done as Quesadilla.
That's right.
And that's a K-A-Y and the last name, S-E-D-I-A.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful group of people, though. That's
amazing.
Great.
So I'm delighted to be involved with them.
And did you direct Chico's Angels? How were you involved in that one?
I performed in Chico's Angels, Chico's Angels 4. Which is the fourth installment. Chicas Are Forever. And that was the one that had original music. The others had musical parodies.
Okay.
So that's how I got to know those guys. And then moving on, was thrilled to ask to direct a couple of projects. And they become great friends. And they're super talented people.
No, they are. And nice guys, too.
Very
really,
nice.
Really pleasant. And, yeah.
And it's kind of a kick to go over to Casita de Campo. And, have a drink at the bar there, go into the theater, which is actually a little scary, a little daunting, to be in the basement of that building.
The basement of a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, we try to work that into every show to say that, we're big in the basement.
Well, whoever the owner is, perhaps it is the owner. I met recently when I was
there. Mr. Dan?
Yes, I think it was him. He was so, I found him very, very funny, very funny.
He's
talking
hilarious.
To him after the show and then, of course, what he did in just announcing the show.
Yeah. It's an amazing space and very popular. Those shows sell out. It's kind of not too well kept secret anymore. It's it's a great place to work. Mm-hmm.
That's like, that's the thing. It's culty.
Yes,
it's like
culty.
You go, you get down to, I remember when I was in Chicago, there's a place on North Clark Street called Cafe Voltaire. And we did a production of Under Milkwood down there. And it was all, it was a basement. It was all stone, almost like field stone. And it was like you were in this Welsh fishing village. And it was perfect for that. And it went to another theater and it did very well. It extended. But there's so much to be said for that. I mean, Chica's Angels, where else are you going to do it?
Right.
I mean, it's perfect.
Right. It's cheesy theater in a cheesy space.
Right.
Yeah, barely
And you
produced.
Can get cheesy enchiladas while you're there.
Exactly.
So you're covered.
That's right.
So you direct and you produce and you're performing in Moon Over Buffalo.
Yes.
I know. Speaking of cheesy, this is a cheesy question. Where does your heart lie? What's your favorite?
My favorite thing to do?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Live theater, I think, is my first love, but I'm big into improv also. So don't ask me to choose.
Okay.
Unless you want me to cry. I love all of my children equally, guys, really.
And now Moon Over Buffalo, were you familiar with the work before you auditioned for it? Because, I mean, Ken Ludwig's got so many other properties. Lend Me a Tenor. What was the
Crazy for You?
Yeah.
I was less familiar with this one. I think it's a little bit lesser known compared with those other two. I knew of it as the vehicle for Carol Burnett's return to Broadway in 95-ish,
I
believe.
So.
Yeah. So that was when I heard they were producing it, and I already knew Kiff, and I knew Wasatch Theatrical Ventures, who was producing it. So I thought, a role that Carol Burnett originated, I'm in. Let me audition. So that was the original attraction, and I love farce. I love the precision that it demands and the kind of heightened performance that it demands. You can't get away with that in Streetcar Named Desire, for example. Well, maybe a little bit. Maybe Blanche
can. You haven't seen the production.
That's
we
right.
have our moments.
That's right.
Well, then you have to see one day we'll mount the Illegitimate Players production of The Glass Mendacity, the one that's the hybrid of all of the. It's part Streetcar, it's part Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, and it's part Glass Menagerie. And it is. And just to give you an idea of the level of insanity, Brick from Cat in a Hot Tin Roof is just a mannequin. that never actually. And of course, every time he's about to say something, it's like, sit down, Brick. I'll handle this. It's
that's
hysterically
funny. I thought you were going to say he was just a brick.
No, no. Like, well, in effect, he is. So for the listeners that aren't as familiar with Moon Over Buffalo,
yes.
Can you give us a little synopsis?
Sure. It's about a very theatrical couple named George and Charlotte Hay who are
theatrical.
In there.
See, she used it.
Oh, so
that's
they're
right.
Shitty singers?
So they're shitty singers. And, yeah, so they're... Thank you. Thank you, drummer. So they're in their 50s. I won't comment on whether I'm the appropriate age to be playing this part. But so they've sort of feel... They've been on Broadway, and they've kind of done a bit of the Hollywood thing, but they sort of feel like they missed their opportunities to become stars. They're now touring the country in rep. So they're at the Erlanger Theater in Buffalo doing a repertory of Cyrano de Bergerac and Private Lives. And so they, you know, they sort of feel a little bit cheated out of the stardom that they wish they had achieved. So they find out that Frank Capra is going to be directing The Twilight of the Scarlet Pimpernel, and he has cast Ronald Colman and Greer Garson instead of them. So they're at the top of the play, they're upset about that. And through a series of mishaps and misunderstandings, as often happen in farce, they come to believe that Frank Capra is coming to see their matinee performance that afternoon because Ronald Colman and Greer Garson have, for various reasons, left the production of the Scarlet Pimpernel movie.
Okay.
So then all kinds of shenanigans ensue, and doors get slammed, and people fall, and people get drunk, and all that kind of great stuff that
it's
happens
like
so far.
Like a hybrid of Noises Off and Waiting for Guffman, it sounds like.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, yeah, Waiting for Capra. That's yeah. right. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. It is very much like that. Right. It's very funny.
Yeah. Yes,
and
it
it's
is.
Fun to dig into these, you know, my key into the character of Charlotte is that she's utterly driven by her ego. You know, she has no id. Is that the other thing? It's like
right,
ego
right, right,
and your id. She has no id. She just was born without it. So it's just everything about her is like, you know, look at me and me, and it's all about me. And so it makes her a blast to play because you can't do that every day.
Oh, no, but they just could tear into
long.
That. That's
yeah.
got to be,
yeah,
you know.
Very,
I know
very
a
meaty.
Few people like that.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
We want to share the names
not
now?
At all.
Or?
Not at all.
No. We're talking about Moon Over Buffalo. This production opened August 2nd. It plays through September 14th at the Grove Theater Center in Burbank. That's right at the George Isaie Park. It's 1111B West Olive Avenue. In the center of George Isaie Park. For people, it's a little difficult to find if you come
yeah.
from the street, but there's an easy way to figure it out.
Yeah.
There's a plane. If you see the plane,
plane.
There's a plane on the lawn.
Plane.
Go behind the plane
yeah.
and behind the softball field. But it's a beautiful little theater tucked into the park over there. And for tickets, it's plays411.com/moon, or you can call 323-960-7721. Facebook.com, Moon Over Buffalo, and, of course, Wasatch Theatrical Ventures. I'm not going to spell that. It takes too much time.
It's hard
but,
enough to
we'll
say.
Throw this information out there a couple more times before
and
the end
lovely
of the
Raquel
era.
Lerman is producing
yes. yes.
And
yes.
we have a phenomenal cast, and Kif Scholl has done an amazing
Kif
job
is
directing.
Great.
He's
yeah.
yeah, so come and see it. It's a blast. You will laugh, I guarantee.
And we will throw a hello out to some of these cast members. Mark Belnick as George Hay, Paul Galliano as Paul, Carol Herman as Ethel, if I get this right here, mm-hmm. Sarah Randall Hunt as Eileen, of course, Kimberly Lewis, who is with us, playing Charlotte Hay. Paul Michael Neiman as Richard. Chuck Raucci. Did I have that right?
I believe so.
Raucci.
Sorry,
I should notice.
Chuck.
He's a paisan.
I know.
Should notice.
Raucci.
As Howard. Kerry Safran as Roz Hay. And then we get to the, that's it for the cast. But
Paul Michael Neiman, I know. He's a yes. lovely
oh,
guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a radio guy.
I love
guy.
His hair.
Yeah.
His
he's
hair
amazing hair and
yeah.
an amazing voice.
I mean,
and
the hair alone is worth the price
right.
of a
drink.
Totally.
Amazing hair?
Yeah.
Amazing hair.
Beautiful.
You would say the same
yeah.
thing. If
really?
You
yeah.
That's a, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how good can someone's hair be that that's the first
that
thing that occurs?
Trust
good.
Me, it's that
pretty
good.
Pretty damn good, yeah. He's
good.
A very handsome man to
he
begin
is,
with,
yes.
and then he's got this very handsome hair.
Does yeah. he have, like, Jeff Conaway hair? Because I remember in Taxi, Jeff Conaway's hair in Taxi was the greatest hair ever.
Yeah, it's different.
It's different.
It's equally.
I need to
good.
Put you on the
don't
spot.
Don't make me choose. You keep. You know.
I love all like, my hairy children.
That's right, all of my hairy children. No,
wasn't
but
his
he,
hair in a perm?
Oh, yes, yeah. of course, yeah. I have to put my Throwback Thursday picture of me in the perm when I had it done.
Oh, please don't.
And I just look like a cross between like Greg Brady and a cockatiel.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
just
yeah,
like, because with this nose and you
rocking
make that
jufro.
Hair. Oh, yeah, yeah. I just look like.
I rock the jufro.
Put a giant cuddle bone next to me. I just was.
Jufro, is that
yeah.
what you said?
Yes. Well,
rocking the jufro?
I rock the jufro.
I was in a band called Rockin' the Jufro. We didn't do very well, but we tried.
Really?
Yes.
Was there a lot of klezmer music?
Yes. Rocking the Jufro.
Yes. So, Kimberly. Let's get back to Kimberly.
Sorry.
That's polite for shut up,
for,
Paul.
Right. Enough.
Let's get back to
Kimberly. No. I just wanted to, you know, every once in a while I'll ask somebody you know, kind of look at you. You're a larger than life, you know, personality, which is so great. That what's what makes you an interesting actress, I'm sure. Did you always want to be an actress? Did you know this from the time you were a child?
Yeah, I did. I guess that's the boring answer, but I never wanted to do anything else. And I was always, you know, putting on the little plays at home. And in fact, there's a picture of me from when I was maybe 6 or 7, and I idolized Carol Burnett growing up, and I, for some reason, really identified with her cleaning lady character of all the characters. It's kind of a bittersweet character. And there's a picture of me. I had dressed myself up at the age of 6 or 7 as this cleaning lady character with a little shower cap on my head. I'm holding a mop. It's really cute. But it's like, wow, you know, I guess I couldn't find any small Mrs. O'Higgins clothes to put on. I was always a ham.
Interesting, though, that of all the characters, the pantomime one, you know, because that was, I don't think the cleaning lady ever spoke, you know.
Isn't it terrible? I don't remember now. But I do recall
she sang because she always closed the show.
No, no, but I don't think that the cleaning lady was ever like in a sketch.
She was not
anything.
In a sketch. It was always her alone, I believe.
Right, right, right.
But it was more of a bittersweet.
Right. Yeah,
sort
no,
of the
yeah.
character
sort of,
who hadn't, you know,
who's very kind of, Keaton-esque.
Yeah.
Kind of like
yeah.
a deadpan sort of, yeah.
Yeah, so for some reason I related to that.
Yep.
I don't know, we can like dial that. In my therapist. If
and I mean Michael Keaton, but I mean Michael Keaton. Yeah,
oh, no, Keaton-esque. Is that what you said?
I said Keaton-esque, as in Buster Keaton-esque.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Michael Keaton.
Or Michael
qualify.
Keaton, also a great performer, but absolutely. Not really known for his silent work.
So Carol Burnett,
yeah.
Who obviously is one of your idols,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, she's the big one. Yeah.
You know, I just saw her at the Hollywood Bowl. I was covering the opening night of the Bowl's season this year, and she was giving an award to one of the inductees in the Hall of Fame. And she looked just, you know, she looks just the same, really.
I
know she's had stuff done, and I believe in that. If you, you know, if that's what you need to make yourself feel a certain way, then you should do it, especially if you can afford it like she can. And she had it done very well.
Yeah.
So she was charming, absolutely charming.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love Carol Burnett?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people that used to, on a Saturday night, plan their going out on a Saturday around her show.
Oh, we did, yeah.
Never went until after it was over.
And it really was the last great hurrah of the variety show.
Variety show, that's
right. It's like
right.
you had, right before that, you that's had right. like, it started to dwindle, it got down to Smothers Brothers and Sonny and Cher, and then Carol Burnett was sort of the last gasp of it.
Yeah.
And how do you follow that? You know, if that's the last, you know, who was the one who's been on our show, Michael, who was a dancer on
Joe,
our show?
Jim Alva.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Joe, I don't know how to say his last name.
Jim Alva.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was sharing great tales. He was one of the staff dancers.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't Stan Mazin also?
Stan Mazin as well.
Stan Mazin.
Yes. Yeah. That's who I was thinking of was Stan Mazin. I forgot about Joe.
Yeah, they both were involved there. And I'm sure they do have some great stories. You know, and she's such a nice lady. You know, she's one of those people, you see her and it's exactly what you get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, offstage.
Isn't the Upstairs Theater at Pasadena Playhouse named for her daughter?
It is.
Yeah.
Carrie Hamilton.
Yeah.
Who she lost very young, if I remember correctly. She was ill.
Sadly.
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
I've not been to that theater, though. Have you?
It's nice. I have. I mean, I've seen some improv shows there, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great space.
I hear it's a great space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Let's throw this out here. Michael, would you do it? Would you do the honors of the Moon Over Buffalo information?
Sure.
Space there?
Wasatch Theater Ventures presents Moon Over Buffalo, And as we said, written by Ken Ludwig and directed by our friend Kiff Scholl and Raquel Lerman, the lovely Raquel Lerman. Great producer in town, and it is already in progress, and it runs through September 14th. Dark Labor Day weekend, however, and that August 29th, 30th, and 31st plays Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. Tickets, a very, very economical $25. Go to plays411.com/moon or simply call 323-960-7721 for the tickets. And the theater, one of the nice theaters in town in a great park, with, as Paul said, you'll know you're there when you see an actual airplane exactly. in the park yes. on the ground. Yeah. And it is the Grove Theater Center, known as the GTC, 1111B, West Olive Avenue, in the center of George Isaac Park, across from the baseball field. Free ample street parking and a lot parking off Clark Street, I believe. Mm-hmm. And allow 10 minutes, you know, to kind of walk through the park and get to the theater. Running time of the show, 120 minutes, one intermission.
Yep.
You have your cocktail, go back for the second act, yeah. right? Yeah. Or maybe... Do they sell cocktails?
I think because it's in a park, they're not
So bring your own. Bring
yeah, your, I think BYOB. It's a BYOB situation. I think you should flask it.
Yes.
I'm saying.
Well, we wish you great luck.
We're not supporting it, but we encourage it nonetheless.
Was that your mother?
Yes. Yes.
Was that the other show?
Yes.
I wanted to do
Why is that woman got a straw in her pocket? Shut up. Shut more lime juice. I told you. Gimlet, for Christ's sake.
Excuse me.
Anyway, sorry. All right, we're going to do our arts calendar there and then speak to Daniel, this lovely gentleman to my right. Michael, do you want to kick off our arts calendar for us today?
Performing Arts Live says a superb cast leads the way to great fun and plenty of laughs in the world premiere of The Max Factor Factor. The music by Joe Blodgett and lyrics by Shayna Wise are award-winning in their book, in Performing Arts Live book. This is kind of one of their brief reviews of the show. This musical comedy set in Hollywood's golden age is directed by Michael Shepard, and it is one of Performing Arts Live featured events this week, and we always pay attention to those shows. And this is being produced by New Musicals Incorporated in association with Celebration Theater, and the Max Factor Factor at the NoHo Arts Center, currently on stage, and that is one of our great theaters, too.
I love that space.
11136 Magnolia Boulevard, just east of Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood.
Right by the Pit Fire.
Yeah, so, yes. the synopsis of this show is as follows. It's 1936, the golden age of Hollywood, and two rival movie studios. Paul, why don't you take this?
No, go right ahead. Continue it. Go ahead.
You know, I didn't realize I was reading.
Not at all. Continue.
Okay.
Please.
It's the golden age of...
I'll just hum.
You know, do that in the background, yeah. And two rival movie studios are... get your mother in on that humming, too. It'd be real interesting.
It's 1936, the golden age of Hollywood. Two rival movie studios are in a heated battle for survival when their opposing leading men fall in love. Oh, it's gay. Reminiscent of screwball comedies of the past, this new musical takes place in a world of artifice, backstabbing, lavender weddings, double-crossing starlets, and a moral crusader from the Legion of Rectitude, making it increasingly more difficult for the leading men to hold on to the one real thing each has ever found. You threw that to me because you knew there was no punctuation in that entire thing.
Right.
I got through the
you
whole thing.
It.
It's funny, charming, romantic, happily nostalgic, and very tuneful. For tickets, visit facebook.com, The Max Factor Factor, or call 818-560-8500. That's 818-560-8500. The lovely Michael Shepard, who we've had on the show a number of times.
Indeed. And I saw it. I went to the opening
actually. Did you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And I don't quite feel the same way about the show. I think it's definitely something that has great promise. Mm-hmm. It's a new work, so it's getting up on its feet. But it's cast a little... many cast members are absolutely right for it. There's a couple that I disagreed with the casting choices of. But, you know, again, opening night, first time you've ever put it on its feet. And in front of the public, certainly has some work to be done on the show, and I think that that probably will be done. Michael is a brilliant director, and he was working with what he had at the time, so I'm sure.
And that's always what you have with a brand new work.
Yeah.
You know, it has to sort of find its legs. You know, oddly enough, Michael, I was going to audition for this
one. It is a musical.
But I couldn't because I had a conflict.
What was that?
I can't sing or dance. Okay. Oh, stop it. My sides. You see this? Tears. Anyway, enough of me. Michael, please introduce this gentleman to my right, to your left, and let's our very patient gentleman.
I will. To our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, recently played Mo Axelrod in Awake and Sing for the Group Repertory Theater, where he is a company member. Other local credits include the role of Noel in War, Bassanio? Am I saying that
Bassanio.
Right? Bassanio.
Yeah.
In Merchant of Venice, Malcolm in Macbeth at Theater Banshee, Mark Antony in Julius Caesar, Cassio in Othello at A Noise Within, and Moderation at Pasadena Playhouse. His film credits include The Whisperer in Darkness, Winged Feet Do Fly, Power Poison, Zombie Holocaust, and You, Catherine, which played at the Cannes Film Festival. Here today to talk about his role as the brooding and brawling Stanley Kowalski, please welcome Daniel Kamen. Oh, yeah.
I can get used to that music. Thank you.
So how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Stanley. Now, there, how, you know, I know it's the question you expect and all that, but really, how do you put a spin, your own spin, on a character that iconic from, you know, American theater and film?
It's a great question and one you've got to get when you're taking on Stanley Kowalski.
Yeah.
I think you really have no choice but to own the role for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's an iconic role. It's an iconic play. There's iconic characters, not just Stanley, but also Blanche and Stella, too.
They sell iconic in the lobby, by the way, too.
They sell iconic.
Yeah, little bottle.
What do you know? That was a plug for iconic. I think you just approach it. I think, I mean, for me, the way it was approached in the film or other versions and everything you read about it, and it's sort of woven into our American fabric, you know, of our culture. That interpretation was done over 50 years ago, amazingly, by Marlon Brando. So I think audiences have changed and actors have changed and the approach to the work has changed a little bit. So for me, it was actually very easy to let go of anything, any preconceptions I had and just work with what is a brilliant text by a brilliant playwright, Tennessee Williams, and just jump in.
And is it played, but it is played at that time.
It is, yes. It's very authentic. It is 1947. You are in New Orleans. We're in the French Quarter. You know, we are in Stanley and Stella's apartment. The set incorporates the really well designed by Chris Winfield, incorporates the street outside, the apartment upstairs where their two neighbors reside and our characters in the show as well. So it's all very authentically done.
Yeah. One of the great, great and wonderfully heavy-handed Tennessee Williams metaphors of all of his work is in that play. And it's the first thing that happens in that play. And it's the bag of meat.
The bag of meat getting
thrown up the stairs like the caveman bringing home the kill and just hurls a bag of bloody meat up the stairs.
Exactly.
And it's just like, oh, man, that's jumping off the edge of the pool.
Yeah.
There's no diving board.
We had some back and forth with that package of meat because we looked at it. We're like, it's not bloody enough, you know. So they dressed it up some more, and we do like another dress rehearsal. Like, nope, it's got to be bloodier. Yeah. So we got it till it's saturated.
If there could be a hoof sticking out of the bag, that's really what we're shooting
for. Exactly. Still moving around on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
Puts it down.
That's the old adage, you know, a steak so rare a good vet could have it on its feet in an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're looking for. But the now that space, if I remember the Lonnie Chapman space, I saw a show there. Not a big playing area, right? I mean,
not a huge playing area, but certainly big enough. And they deliberately brought in the size of the playing space to sort of help with the feeling of this is a two room, not two bedroom, but two room apartment and a bathroom,
right?
You know, and that's it. And so you've got, you know, basically what turns into a pressure cooker for these characters, being so close to one another in these confines in the space. You know, they
hot and humid.
And hot and humid and all of that, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, the other thing that, well, I think for me, the one thing I remember, of course, when I saw this movie a long time ago, of course, but way after it was out, was, you know, your character yells that name, mm-hmm. Stella, which has become very, very, you know, memorable, right?
Yes.
We all remember that.
Yeah.
When you come to that moment mm-hmm. in the play, what did you do to get that to be something as memorable?
It's a great question. So, you know, interestingly enough, it's one of the parts of the show we tackled very last in the process. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't deliberate. I think it was just literally pulling what is a very big show together and pulling it all together at the end. We just realized we hadn't really gone over that. We'd sort of run through it each time, and we'd eventually carve out time to do it. And so finally, just a few days before our previews, we decided that we would tackle it. And L. Flint Esquerra, the director, you know, I think gave me permission to play around, and Anya Profumo, who plays Stella, kind of the opportunity to explore the moment. And, you know, ultimately, I go back to the text, go back to what Tennessee Williams has in the text mm-hmm. and what his own commentary within the text helped guide me to get to the moment. And it's very clear. So even if you go back to the film version, you know, there are beats. And those are laid out by Tennessee Williams, and he knows what he's doing.
Right,
so
right.
We're going to follow that along. But mm-hmm. I think also we found some really genuine moments within that updated, in our opinion, also just sort of breathe life into it, and something that I think the audience does connect with.
Now, the play I've never read the script. I have years ago, mm-hmm. but there were a lot of modifications for the film,
yes.
if I remember correctly. And there were certain things that they couldn't present,
yep.
Or could only allude to in the film because of obviously the time period and all that. Without giving too much away, that I would imagine that was very freeing for you, going to, you know, the play text rather than in terms of not having that screen image in your head when you were doing it.
100%. I think the journey, the story is so much more fulfilling in the actual play version versus mm-hmm. the film version, which, you know, not only did they have, you know, censorship that they had to contend with at the time, but also they had time to contend with. They had to sort of condense it down
sure.
just for a movie audience. So I think when you get to do the whole show and it's three acts with only one intermission, by the way, but it is a three-act play, it does allow you to understand the journey that these characters have gone on. Who they are at the beginning of the play is very different than who they are at the end of the show for all the characters, really.
Right, right. Yeah, it's people have a tendency to overlook Stella's journey as well because the Stanley character is so rich, and of course Blanche DuBois, another, I hate to use the word iconic again, but just that. But Stella's, you know, that's one of the great thankless roles.
Yeah, and she is in the middle of a battle and a tug
and
of
Mitch
war
as well.
For her for her affection. And Mitch as well, you know, he's also, his journey is significant in the show too, and he goes to the ringer just like everybody else.
Another actor.
Was there anything borrowed from the film that went into the production? I mean, ever? I mean, sometimes that happens.
Not intentionally. I don't think so. I know for me, for my process, I stayed away from the film version or any following film versions, mm-hmm. whatever I could, because I know I'd seen it in high school or college.
There's the nude water ballet that you added.
We did add that.
Oh, wow.
Because,
but who hasn't
Nothing
added
does
that?
That, but
that explains
nude water
3 hours.
Yeah. And penguins.
No, penguins, that would be silly.
Yeah. Well,
that'd be crossing the line.
There is a nude scene. In one version that I saw, there was a nude scene. And it was Ed... this very wonderful actor, I want to say...
Ed Norton?
Ed Harris.
He was, and it was at the Stella Adler Theater, mm-hmm. and this was years ago, and...
And they
were completely nude, yes.
Well, there is a scene where, you know, Stan and Stella do end up in the bedroom together.
Right.
So that could be an opportunity, I think, also, like, you know...
No, actually, they were playing poker. They were nude during the poker.
Oh, they were doing
the
strip
scene.
Poker. Yes. It was a strip yes. poker game.
Yes. Yeah. And Mitch won
That's
big.
A whole other spin on the
yes.
show.
Yes. Mitch yeah. won
All kinds
big.
Of ideas coming out of this interview. Yeah. Yes. Next time we do it.
Yes, of course.
Poker.
I'm sorry. Well, there is a poker game.
There's a couple poker
yeah,
scenes.
There's a
That's
couple
true.
Of poker scenes. Oh, yeah.
Right. In today's, with today's youth, it would be Pokemon.
Pokemon, yes, the Pokemon game. We're talking Streetcar Named Desire. This is presented by the Group Rep at the Lonnie Chapman Theater. That's at 10900 Burbank Boulevard in North Hollywood. For reservations, thegrouprep.com or 818-763-5990. Once again, ticket price, you can't believe, yeah. $15 to $25 with senior and student discounts. The website, again, thegrouprep.com, and ample street parking on Burbank Boulevard on Cleon Avenue, just south of Burbank Boulevard.
And, you know, it's one of the most comfortable theaters in town.
Too. It is.
Yes, for,
it is.
For a 99-seater. It's
yeah.
lovely.
And they've done it for so long. They just yeah. got it down there. I mean, yeah. just, I mean, obviously the, with the play, it, that's assumed, but just the way you're received there, it's a very warm theater. There's a real familial feeling
yes,
over there.
Yes, indeed.
And this plays open July 25th, and the reviews have just been phenomenal, and it closes September 7th. Mm-hmm. Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sunday matinee at 2 with a with a talk back Sundays with the cast after the show, and that's on August 3rd and August 24th. So one has happened, but coming up on August 24th is
yes,
talk
back after.
Always
Sunday
like to push that when that happens because it's always fun to.
So this does play over the holiday weekend.
Yes. So if you're in town for Labor Day weekend,
maybe I'll
come check out Streetcar.
Yeah,
there
yeah
you go.
Sure. She's
love
do.
To have you.
I'm
yeah.
available.
And what?
And she would love to have you. So you know.
And
this is working out well.
What is the act break after two? Do you do one in act one and act two, and then the act break, and then do three?
It's basically right in the middle of two.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, right. So you've got it's a very
evenly
well timed. It's a,
yeah.
yeah, it's evenly distributed. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, oh. it's been quite an evening. You know, and I think the audience and the critic response has been very positive to the show. So we've actually been a bit overwhelmed because you never know till you get up to opening a show. Is this going to fly or is it going to sink?
Right.
And when you're so personally invested, it's hard to really tell. But the response has been really, really very positive. We're all very humbled by it.
I remember my friend was talking about a production that he did in Chicago. That will remain nameless. I'm not going to say it because I saw the show, but it was one of these examples of them doing this poignant historical story that took place in Holland or something. And the opening night, they thought it was the highest. It ran forever, but they thought it was the highest camp ever. And they thought it was, but it was not played that way.
Yeah.
And they immediately embraced it
wow.
that way. And then you couldn't get a ticket for it because it was just like so. But it is to go back to what you were saying about not knowing
right.
until you step out on those boards how it's going to be received. Because it is. You're in a very fragile theatrical ecosystem before the show opens.
Yes.
There's no outside, very little outside world, you know. You like the way I worked ecosystem?
I love yeah. that. Thank
I get you. 20 yes. bucks every time I say ecosystem.
Do you?
Yeah. We have a sponsor.
And we should probably acknowledge, because she's a friend of mine, Deirdre Celeste.
Yes, who is remarkable in the role of Blanche.
I'm sure she is. She, you know, she's another larger-than-life person. I kind of... I like her very much, and she's a very smart lady and a good actress and a hard worker and a very good director, actually. Seen a lot of her stuff that she's done over at the Glendale Center Theater and
yes,
other places.
She's quite talented.
And she is super talented. So that's a pleasure. And Gina Yates, of course, she plays Blanche, is that right?
Well, she'll be going on as Blanche
Jackson
for Labor
understudy.
Day weekend. She's understudy, yes.
Fantastic.
Yep, and we have Anya Profumo as Stella. She's wonderful. Kent Butler, who's playing the role of Mitch, and really the whole ensemble, J. Kent NSA, Lizanne Keighley and Laura Coker as the upstairs neighbors. Really, just it's a wonderful group. It's one of those rare shows where you've got a nice combination of talent coming from the entire cast, the production team. I mentioned Chris's set. It's really something, and Robert Murdoch's lighting design and Steve Shaw's sound design are remarkable, and we've got some live music in the show as well. So you add all those elements together, and You know?
Oh, it sounds it. And you know, the, both of these shows, not only Moon Over Buffalo, but also Streetcar, these are, you have to take the opportunity to see things like this. They're not presented
That's
often.
Right.
I mean, Moon Over Buffalo, to me, is one of the great farces. I will take it over. Noises Off is a great farce, but it's not sort of the smart, silly that Moon Over Buffalo is. It's almost like the way I describe Monty Python a lot of time. You have to be very, very, very smart to present that style of silly. And so these two, great opportunities to see this stuff locally, and you should. Go.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Go.
Go.
It's that time, Michael. We got 5 minutes. It's that time.
We do. We
hit up our guests.
Baptize our guests.
Yes. It's that point in the show, folks. 5 minutes left, and we can start with you, Kimberly, to share a nightmare performance story that either got you embarrassed or injured or the like or something like that. You got one for us?
Oh, I sure do. So this is a good one. For many years, I performed at Acme Comedy Theater doing improvisation and sketch comedy. And I do not see well in the dark. So as you know, in sketch comedy, you're going from one sketch to another, many costume changes in between. So the lights went out and I went running to go change my costume backstage. And someone had placed these modular blocks that we had used for set pieces, right, kind of filling the area that I was running. And I was running at top speed, and my shin hit one of these blocks and vaulted me up in the air.
Oh,
and I was in complete darkness, so I didn't even know if I was up or down. And I landed, I guess I must have landed kind of on my face and on my arm. And I found out later that I had, because I was in shock when it happened, so I didn't really know. But I had broken my arm, and I had kind of split open my shin, so blood was pouring into my shoe. It's really gross. I'm sorry.
Yikes.
I'm sorry. We should have issued a warning before I told the story. But but the weird thing is, I was in the next 3-4 sketches before the end of the show, and I finished that show, which is either a testament to my fortitude or the fact that I really was just in shock and had no idea.
You broke your arm.
I broke my arm, yeah.
And you just...
I finished the show, and blood was... They literally... I was wearing tights as part of my costume, and they put wrapped duct tape around my shin and covered it with a leg warmer. Although someone in the audience said, well, you could still see the blood going into the shoe between the leg warmer and the shoe. So after that, my nickname at Acme was Hardcore, which I feel like was
well earned.
Yeah.
Well earned. And of course, those modular blocks, they always have to paint them the... I think the paint, the name of the paint is Inky Night Sky. Because it's like
totally
it vanishes. Right. It's like every.
It's true.
I know you can't see it. Like you can be holding one and not see it.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, it's a new Sherwin Williams paint color. Inky Night Sky.
Inky Night Sky.
Wow! That was a good one.
I know, right?
Daddy,
yeah. Bloody one,
blood.
Right. That was pretty good.
Sorry.
It's been hard
to
top.
Can you top that?
I don't know if I can top it, but...
I was backstage putting modular blocks.
Exactly. I tipped over and I broke my arm.
Yeah.
Me too.
It's amazing that happened
to
you,
world.
Too.
Good job painting modular set pieces.
Yeah. And there's so many, and as you guys know, things come up all the time in live shows. But last year when I was doing Awake and Sing over at Group Rep, we had a small dog, Tootsie, in the show. Aww. And there is a scene, she's adorable little white dog, and there's a point where I have to pick her up and kind of hold her for a little bit and pet her, and she was right on cue. We call her one take Tootsie, because she was remarkable for a dog. And but there was this one evening where I picked her up and scooped her in my arms and was petting her, and then as I'm putting her down, I'm like, my shirt feels a little damp. And sure enough, Tootsie hadn't been walked, I guess, really before the show, so had to go off stage and do a quick change. Had to do it anyway. But
now here's the question:
I got pissed on by a dog on stage.
She felt comfortable enough to do it.
She did. We had bonded at that point.
Dogs always mark their actor. They always mark their actor.
She's marking her territory.
What did you? Was it really apparent to the audience that it was happening, or did you just look like a big sweater?
I had a suit on, and it was like a white shirt anyway. So I think I was aware. I don't think the audience read it
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Because that's why people have chihuahuas, man. That's a dog for lazy people. Yeah. You don't have to walk them. Just hold them out the window and squeeze.
Squeeze?
That's all you do. Yeah, it's a dog for lazy people. Hold them out the window and squeeze. You like that image?
I don't.
You like the, that's what,
I do.
Before we go off the air, let's throw this information out there once again. First off, Moon Over Buffalo, that is playing through August 31st, it looks like. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to have that right. No, through September 14th.
September 14th,
yes. Through September 14th. For tickets, plays411.com/moon or 323-960-7721. This is at the Grove Theater Center in the back of George Isaiah Park near the baseball field. Facebook.com, Moon Over Buffalo, and WasatchTheatricalVentures.com. That's the Moon Over Buffalo information.
And Streetcar Named Desire, written by Tennessee Williams, and it is a classic for sure. You must see. July 25th, it opened, and it plays through September 7th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2. Talk back Sundays with cast after the show, and that's August 3 and August 24th. Lonnie Chapman Theater on Burbank Boulevard in North Hollywood. Simply go to thegrouprep.com for tickets or 818-763-5990. And you can't miss with that one, right?
No,
Neither of them.
Yeah.
Hilarious. And
folks, thank you so much, Rab. Yeah. What a pleasure.
Thank
what
you.
A fun. This hour flew.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it was almost like it was 50 minutes.
You know? Seemed like 45.
Did it?
Yeah.
No, just no, real joy. Really, really enjoyed it. And
so
best
much.
Of luck with
thank
both
you.
Of
you. I will
production.
See you tomorrow night, sir. I'm
fantastic.
Coming to see your show. Yes, and I'm coming to see yours, too.
Please do.
Yeah, and
yeah,
Paul.
And I will see you next week on the radio. I'm going to try to catch him as well.
Yeah,
yes,
definitely.
I have the fairly busy dance card, but I love both of them, so I want to see it.
Okay.
We'll see you next week.
Yes, sir, on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.